We're going to dedicate today's Divrei Torah to Bracha Bas Yeshaya Visara Tzivya, whose Shloshim is today, and whose 98th birthday would have been today as well, the mother of two of our regular attendees of the Shir. So her neshama should have an aliyah from our Divrei Torah, and your family should only know nachas and simchas in the year going forward. As we know, today is Asara B'Teves, so we're going to take a little break from our regular study of Pirkei Avos. But before we get into our discussion for today, let me just make something clear about the next 2 weeks. We have a legal holiday next Tuesday morning, and then a legal holiday the following Tuesday as well. So we have special programming that will be in place of this regular shiur. I hope to attend those programs, and I hope all of you will take advantage as well. We have next Tuesday a program together with Torah Web, featuring Rabbi Meir Twersky and Rabbi Daniel Stein. Both of them will be speaking. It's for men and women, starting at 9:30 here in this room as well. And the following week, we have a program together with NCSY that will be with Rabbi Baruch Simon, as well as Rabbi Judah Michel. So they will be speaking also in this room at 9:30 on January 1st. So that's the next 2 weeks. My Monday night class did want that we should continue the Monday night, even though the Tuesday morning is not meeting, so all of you are welcome to join us on Monday evening the next 2 weeks. The Shir meets at 8 o'clock. It meets every week at 8 o'clock, but the next 2 weeks we're going to continue Pirkei Avos. That's what they wanted. And you are all certainly welcome to join us the next two Monday evenings at 8 p.m. here in this room, where we will have our regular women's Shir. Today being Asara B'Teves is one of the 4 days during the calendaric year where we have the opportunity to commemorate Churban Beis HaMikdash. And it's a time for us to think about what it means to live a life of Churban, what it means to live a life without a Beis HaMikdash. Not only should we be thinking about how hungry we might be for those who are fasting in the room, but we should also give time to think during the day about what life would be like if we only had a Beis HaMikdash, and how differently our lives have become as a result of the lack of a Beis HaMikdash. So we begin with an important Gemara, Meseches Baba Basra, Daf Samach Amud Beis. Let's see the Gemara together, where we're told the following. Tana Rabbanan, Kishacharav HaBayis B'Shnia, when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabu Perushim B'Yisrael, there were many pious individuals in the Jewish community who decided amongst themselves, without any direction, they just decided on their own, Shalo Lechol Basar V'Shalo Lishtos Yayin, no longer are we going to eat meat, no longer are we going to drink wine. Where did that come from? So what would you say? Nazir. What? Nazir. Why is this connected to a Nazir? Should have nothing to do with a Nazir. So what is it? Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, Nitva lehen Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua heard about this practice and he said, why is it that there's a group of Jews who have decided no longer to eat meat and no longer to drink wine? Amar lehem b'ni, mipnei ma yatem ochlim basar ve'en atem shosim yayin. Why is it that you no longer have meat and wine in your diet? Amrilo, they said, does it make sense? Nochal basar shemimenu makriven al gabi hamizbeach. We used to have a Beis HaMikdash, and we used to have a mizbeach. And on the mizbeach, we used to offer karbanos. And on that mizbeach that we no longer have, and we cannot offer karbanos, does it make sense? Is it appropriate that today we should go and enjoy the meats when God himself, so to speak, does not have the meats that he prefers? And therefore they said it wouldn't make sense for us to eat meat at a time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not have the opportunity to have karbanos being offered on his mizbeach. And nishta yayin, does it make sense that we should drink wine? Shemen naskin al gabi hamizbeach ve'achshav batel. We know that they used to have a practice of nisuch hayayin. They used to pour wine onto the mizbeach. Not only did they offer animals, but they also offered wine offerings, and therefore the Gemara says, does it make sense that at a time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself cannot have meat and cannot have wine, so to speak, that we should enjoy in our own private home something that God himself cannot enjoy? Well, said Rabbi Yeshua, if that's the case, Amar Lahem, let's take that one step further. Im Kain, Lechem lo nochal, no more bread either. Why? Because on top of the karbanos that they used to offer, which were made from animals, they also had wine, and they also had what we refer to as menachos. They used to have bread that was brought onto the mizbeach. Shekvar batlu ha-menachos. Well, the Gemara says, that wouldn't be so bad if we knocked bread out of our diet, out of our routine. We would still be able to have fruits. Says the Gemara, not so fast. Peros lo nochal shekvar batlu ha-bikurim. What do you mean? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. which takes out the opportunity for us to offer our first fruits to the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore, we're going to knock out meat, wine, bread, and fruits. That's a pretty skimpy diet that you're left with. So the Gemara says, no efshar b'peiros acherim. As we know, they only used to offer bikurim from the Shivas Haminim, but there were many other items that you can eat, many other fruits and vegetables that people enjoy, which would not have been excluded from the list based on the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Gemara, well, let's take it further. They had a mitzvah once a year of Nisuch HaMayim, right? On Sukkos, we used to have a practice of pouring the water onto the Mizbeach. That's why we have the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. That's what it's all about. So the Gemara says, well, if we take it one step further, no more water. Because now we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And if we cannot perform the mitzvah of Nisuch HaMayim, let's get rid of water, let's get rid of wine, let's get rid of bread, let's get rid of fruits, and we're left with nothing. We're all going to die. Well, says the Gemara, not a good idea. Shasku, they realize this cannot be the adopted practice. And therefore, Amar Lahan, he says, let's try to break it down. Let's try to think about it together. Bini, bo va'omer lachem, shalola hisabel kol iker e efshar. To just go on with life and pretend as if nothing happened and not to implement anything in our lives as a result of the Churban, that would be inappropriate. Shekvar nigzer ha'gzera. To mourn too much and to take too much upon ourselves also would be an inappropriate thing to do, like we just said. You're going to knock out water and bread and fruits and wine and meat. You're going to have nothing left to eat. You're only allowed to make some sort of rabbinic institution when you really believe that the community can handle it, which is an important rule in the first place. But then, says the Gemara, they came to the following compromise. Once again, the operating statement here is, we cannot do something that is going to make us forget about the Churban Beis HaMikdash. We have to implement something into our daily routine, which will be a reminder for all of us. But at the same time, if we do too much and we go to the extreme, that also is something that we cannot live with. And therefore, the Gemara says, they came up with the following few ideas. Says the Gemara, Kach Amru Chachamim. Number one, Sad Adam as Beiso Besid, when a person paints their house, Mishayer Bo Davar Muad. You have to leave over a little bit of the paint to remind you of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Vikama, how much do you need to leave over? Ama Al Ama. Amar Rav Chisda, Keneged HaPesach. It should be right when you walk into the house, so that immediately when entering the house, you'll be reminded of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Number two, says the Gemara, Osa Adam called Sarche Hasuda, Umishayer Davar Muad. When we have elaborate meals that we put together and we invite friends, we should serve whatever it is that we like to serve, but we should remember Lishayer Bo Davar Muad. We should leave something out from the menu. Once again, to show that our lives are incomplete, that there's something deficient over the fact that we do not have a Beis HaMikdash. Number three, says the Gemara, you're not going to like this. Osa Isha called Tachshiteha. A woman should put on makeup and jewelry. Umishayeres davar muat. She should leave something out. It doesn't mean you wear one earring and leave the other one off. It means if you were planning on wearing three necklaces, you should only wear two. We should tone life down a little bit, and we should make sure that we remind ourselves that we do not have the extravagant lifestyles that we're supposed to be living in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, because our lives are missing. Our lives are not sufficient. Our lives are not complete, because of how much is lacking over the fact that we are living through a time of Churban. Says the Gemara, how do we know all of this? Because the Pasuk says, Emeshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini, Tidbak Lishoni Lechiki. Mayal Rosh Simchasi, what does it mean at the end of that Pasuk? That we say, Im lo ales Yerushalayim al Rosh Simchasi. So what does it mean? We say it at a wedding. Now we sing it at a wedding. That was never the practice, but now we make a prominent display of a Meshkachech Yerushalayim. What does it mean, Al Rosh Simchasi, says the Gemara? I'll tell you what it means. Amar of Yitzchak, yet a fourth takana, which is that Efer Makles Shabarosh HaChasanim, that at the wedding you're supposed to put ashes on the head of the chasan in order once again to remind him, Al Rosh Simchasi, at the height of his simcha, at the height of his celebration, he should be reminded about the fact that he does not have a complete celebration. He does not have a Beis HaMikdash. He does not have life operating the way it is supposed to. So one of the Achronim says, why is it that we have an institution here in the Gemara, number one, to make some sort of reminder in our homes, number two, to make a reminder in the jewelry and the clothing that we wear, and number three, in the food that we eat? And he says the answer is because what we lost here by the Churban Beis HaMikdash was, number one, a building, an edifice, the Beis HaMikdash itself. the actual structure. So we remind ourselves of the building every time we walk into our buildings, every time we walk into our homes. What we lost, secondly, was the karbanos. That was probably the primary focus of the Beis HaMikdash was, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's food. Obviously, he didn't eat it, but we used to serve meals, so to speak, to the Ribono Shel Olam by offering all of our karbanos, and therefore, in our meals, in our eating, we have to feel that lack, we have to feel that deficiency, and once again, scale it back than the way we would otherwise have eaten our meal. And number three, we lost the Big Day Kahuna. We used to have the Kohanim doing their work in the Beis HaMikdash. They used to wear the beautiful clothing that were adorned with all the gold and the silver and the different gems, and therefore we should scale it back as well when we get dressed and when we have different kinds of jewelry that we choose to wear on any given day. So that is what the Gemara says. I'd like to spend some time in the rest of the shiur trying to go through some of these halachos and adding some more, which you'll be surprised how many times throughout the year we have scattered about a built-in reminder of Churban Beis HaMikdash. We might not realize it, and it's a good time for us to take the opportunity to think about how often during the year we actually have the opportunity to remind ourselves of Churban Beis HaMikdash. Let's begin with the first takana that the Gemara mentions, which is Shir Alma Al Amma, that you're supposed to leave a square in the front of your house, an Amma squared, which is not supposed to be painted. Let's read the Shulchan Aruch together. In Ilchas Tisha B'Av, Siman Tav Kuf Samach, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Misha Charav Beis HaMikdash. The Shulchan Aruch is writing based off of our Gemara that we just learned. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Tiknu Chachamim Shehayu Ba'osa Hadar, the great leaders of that generation instituted, number one, She'ein Bonin La'olam Binyan Mesuyad U'mechuyar Kibinyan HaMelachim. Number one, when a person engages in building a home, you have to scale back the house that you build. I know it's hard for us to accept that. But the Gemara says, and the Shulchan Aruch says, we should remind ourselves, life is not perfect. And the beautiful home that you always dreamed of having, and the palace that you want to live in some of our neighborhoods like we have, says the Shulchan Aruch, it is improper. Again, if you buy a house from someone else, you didn't build it. But the Shulchan Aruch says, when you are making plans for your own home, keep in mind the fact that this is not the life that you're supposed to be living, and therefore the home that you're going to construct should be scaled back. I always think, even on top of that, just economically, if we believe achakelo b'chayim sheyavo, if we believe that Mashiach is actually going to come, don't you think it's a waste of money? I don't know. I had a very difficult time signing on the home that I bought here, and I said to myself, am I really buying a house in Chutz Laretz? I don't believe that the future of the Jewish people is in Woodmere or anywhere here in America. Why am I buying a house here? Am I crazy? If I really believe, and I sincerely daven every day, achakelo b'chayim sheyavo, what's going to be? Well, the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, the good news is that if you have asidin bate knesios and bate midrasha shebebavel, all of the shuls and all of the places of worship in all of Chutz Laretz are going to end up being relocated into Eretz Yisrael. So I try as much as I can to have shiurim in the house, to have minyanim in the house. Maybe people will take my house and consider it a Beis HaKnesses, a Beis HaMedrash, and they'll take my house along to Eretz Yisrael. But without that, if we don't have Tehillim groups and we don't have our homes being used for Dvarim Shebekdusha, it would seem to me that it's just a tremendous waste of money. Unless we don't believe that we're actually going to leave this country, which is a problem in and of itself. So that's number one. The Shulchan Aruch says you have to remember when building a home that it has to be built in a certain way. It cannot be built like a palace, like an edifice, showing that you're going to be here forever. Number two, Tach Beiso Betit. You should have a simple home, Vesad Besid, Umeshayer Makom Ama Alama Keneged HaPesach Belosid. And you should leave over a little bit of the painting when you're doing the job. We are not going to paint it over, once again, to remind ourselves of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. V'halokeach chatzer misuyedes imuchuyeres. What if I buy the home that was already constructed by somebody else? What do I do then? Well, then says the Shulchan Aruch, harezu b'cheskasa ve'emachayv en oso liklof b'kosalam. I don't have to go around and start peeling off the paint in the home that I bought from somebody else. I don't have to destroy a house that's already built. So when we moved into our home, we bought it from Italian Catholics, and obviously they did not think at all about the Churban. They built a beautiful home, and we were very lucky to be the beneficiaries of the home that they almost didn't use. And the question was, well, do we go now and do something as a Zeche L'Churban? So the answer to that is, the Shulchan Aruch says, clearly not. But how can you move into a home and not make any remembrance of the Churban? How can you not do something to remind yourself every minute when you walk into your home that we're not living in the place where we should be? So we decided to put up a big picture of the Makom HaMikdash right when you walk into the house. At least this way we'll have some sort of reminder. We don't have an obligation to start scraping the paint off of the walls, the Shulchan Aruch says, but we do have an obligation. Tidbak l'shoni l'chiki imloes kerechi. We do have to remind ourselves of Yerushalayim, which is not bibinyana, of Yerushalayim, which is now in a state of Churban. And that is something that we didn't have an obligation to do that, but every Jewish family should do something to remind themselves of the fact that we are living in Galus and that we do not have a perfect life as it should be. So much so that Primigadim, one of the foremost commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, writes that he believes this should not only be done in the front of the home, it should be done in every single room of our homes. Every room of the house. Now it's clear we have not adopted his opinion. We are generally lenient about that, but the point is, the Primigadim feels, how can you have any room in your home? You walk into your bedroom, you walk into any of the rooms in your house, how can you not do something to remind yourself of the Churban? It's not good enough just by the doorway. That's not something that we're going to see all the time. Maybe when you walk in and you walk out, but what about when I go doing all the activities of the home? Says the Primigadim, this is something we should think about, and it's a very important idea to think about as well. I think it's interesting that the Chayyadim in the 1800s writes that there was a practice in his days which has become very popular today. He said there were people who didn't follow the instruction of the Shulchan Aruch, and they would paint the entire house, and in the front of the house they would make a beautiful black painting, and on the painting they would write in gold paint on top of it, Emeshkachech Yerushalayim or something. You go into homes today, and you see there are many who do that. The Emeshkachech wall, the reminder of Yerushalayim that they've constructed there, is nicer than the wallpaper that they have on other parts of the house. And I'm always amazed, and the Chayyadim addresses this, and he says, in his opinion, he says that is a schoch vihitul. You're making a joke out of the practice that the Gemara describes. The Gemara does not say you should make your home nicer in order that you should be able to have a remembrance of Yerushalayim. You're supposed to do something that shows my home is deficient, my home is lacking. And therefore, he says, this is why the Shulchan Aruch describes this, leaving over the Amma al-Amma the way that he does, based off of the Gemara in which we read that one always has to have that reminder when entering into their home. Number two, the Gemara said, we have an obligation, lema'et bisu'uda, which means if you were planning on serving an elaborate meal, you should scale back the meal a little bit and leave something out. I don't know anybody who's ever been to a meal where something seemed to have been left out. And the question is, the Gemara clearly says it, so why is it that we do not follow this? This is not my question. This is the question raised by the Kaf HaChaim, one of the great Gedolim of the Sfardish community, where he asks, why is it that nobody follows this Gemara? Why is it that nobody leaves out one of the courses of the meal that they're going to serve? We all go to weddings and they have a whole menu there. Nowhere on the menu does it say, we're not serving this and this salad or this and this salmon tonight because we like to remind ourselves of the Churban. And the answer that the Kaf HaChaim gives, I think, is something that is very obvious. I once, as a child, went to New Square for Shabbos. I don't know if people here have ever been there. It's an interesting experience. But one thing that really took my attention was, on Friday night, all the Hasidim, like Hasidim normally do, they go to the Rebbe's Tish. And the Rebbe gives out food at the Tish as well. But all the Hasidim in their own private homes have a Shabbos meal at home before they go to the Tish. Do you know that in New Square, they told us at least, every single family serves the exact same food on Friday night as the Rebbe serves at the Tish. Exact same food. So they have the same potato kugel in the round pan, whatever it was, I don't remember exactly, but everybody in the entire community serves the exact same meal every Friday night. Amazing. I haven't seen something like that anywhere in the world, that I've been to at least, where everybody serves the same. You go to one person's house, they happen to like this kind of food, they like salads more than they like chickens and meats, and everybody has their own variations, and therefore writes the Kaf HaChaim, since most of us do not live in New Square, and most of us do not have this kind of diet where everybody's eating exactly the same thing, and we have such a variety and a variation, he says, what good would it be if you left something out? Nobody would even notice. If you left one of the courses out of the meal, nobody would pay attention to it. They would just think, well, that's how it's done. I've been to people's homes where, I'm not saying it's good or it's bad, but you come to the meal and they serve soup right away. They don't serve an entree. Okay, some people like to do that. Some people don't. I didn't ask a question. I just figured That's what they do here. That's the way they like to eat the meal. They want to get done quicker, and that's the way they choose to have their Shabbos meal. Everything's fine. Everything's acceptable. But right for the Kaf HaChaim, because this is the way we live life today, where nobody has the same balanced diet and menu as anybody else, nobody serves the exact same salad and the same kugel and the same fish, therefore he says there would be no point to leave out one of the courses of the meal because it just wouldn't remind you of anything, and nobody at the table would even notice that either. The Gemara writes as well, as we mentioned, that the chassan is supposed to have the dirt, the ashes put on his head at the time of the chassana. There are some achronim who say even the kala should have such a thing as well. In fact, the Tur writes something interesting, which is something that I only saw once in my life. I haven't lived that long, but I don't know, maybe other people have seen it. I once went, my mother brought us as children to it was actually the last wedding that Shlomo Kavlach was Masada Kedushin at in Yerushalayim. Don't ask why we were there, I have no idea. My father did not come, my mother brought us. And at the time, I remember the chassan and kala were wearing very unusual clothing. They were wearing very baggy white clothing, and on their heads they were wearing these olive branches. And I thought it was a very unusual scene. And it always stuck in my mind until I saw the Tur. The Tur actually writes that that is an age-old minhag. I don't know if that's why these chevra did it or not. Could be they had their own ideas. But the Tur writes that this was an age-old practice in the days of the Rishonim, that the chassan and the kala used to put ale zayis al rosheim. They used to put olive branches on their heads instead of the beautiful things that we have today that we wear on our heads. They used to wear that. Why? He says because an ale zayis is mar, because it's very bitter. And we want to remind ourselves at a time of great celebration that our celebration is not complete, that we do not have a Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, the Tur writes, this is where the minhag developed, that they used to not only put the ashes on the head of the chassan, but they would also make sure to wear these ale hazayis to remind themselves of the bitter state of galus that the Jewish people find themselves in, even at a time of great simcha, of great celebration. Not only that, the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubas, an interesting comment, you ever paid attention to the Sheva Brachas that we say at a wedding, or that we say during the entire duration after the wedding has completed? We have Sheva Brachas every night. So some of the Brachas make sense to us, and some of them seem to be related to the Chassan and Kala, right? At the end of the Bracha we say, Mesameach Chassan Mekala, Mesameach Chassan Imakala. Those Brachas make sense. Shehakol Baruch Lechvodo. Why are we saying that? Well, we thank Hashem for creating everybody the way they were created, and the chassan and the kala met each other, and they happened to be two different kinds of people, but everybody was created in the image of Hashem. Great, that relates to the wedding also. There's one bracha, says the Gemara, that seems to have absolutely no relevance or significance at all to the celebration of a wedding, and that is the bracha of Sos Tasis V'Sagel Ha'akara. Anybody who knows Hebrew, you try to translate the words, and you figure out, what in the world does this have to do with a wedding? Sos Tasis V'Sagel Ha'akara. Who is the Akara? Akara means somebody who's barren, somebody who doesn't have children. So the one who doesn't have children should celebrate B'kibutz Baneha L'socha B'simcha, when all of her children will come back. Baruch Atah Hashem Mesameach Tzion B'vaneha. So we're talking about Yerushalayim, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael being a barren land, a country that is not frequented, that we're not currently living in. And we talk about the time when we will be celebrating once again because the Akara, because the woman, so to speak, because Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, that is like the barren woman that doesn't have its children living in it, will once again come back. What does that have to do with a wedding? Nothing at all. How does that relate? Are we trying to say that the Chassan and Kala should celebrate with having children? No, it doesn't seem to be the context of the bracha at all. Well, the Gemara says that this bracha is also instituted to remind us, in the middle of a chuppah, we should be reminded of Yerushalayim. Rashi writes there that the reason why this was instituted is because in the middle of a chuppah, when everybody's minds are on the celebration, or on the couple getting married, or on all these wonderful things, don't forget there's something in life that's not so wonderful. There's an akara. There's Yerushalayim, there's Eretz Yisrael that is not the way it should be, that is not being inhabited the way it's supposed to be. And that is something that is imperative, that every wedding that we celebrate has to have at the height of the celebration not only the ashes on the head of the chassan, but also we need to make sure that we have the bracha that reminds all of us. So we might not be paying attention, but the next wedding that we go to, think about the words when we say that we hope HaKadosh Baruch Hu will once again bring us back Mesameach Tzion Bivaneh, that we should have the opportunity, just as we're celebrating here at a wedding, we should have the real celebration in Yerushalayim, with a Beis Hamikdash once again. There's a shocking comment by Rabbi Yaakov Emden where he writes in the end of the 1700s, Umi Yodea, I forgot to put it on here, but he says, Umi Yodea, I'm not from the school of thought that we should give our own suggestions as to why things happen in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yodea Machshavos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Lo Machshavosai Machshavoseichem. I spoke about it yesterday for those who may have heard. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his own way of running the world. But Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes here what in his conjecture he believes, why is it that there's so many Shalom Bayis problems in the world? You can say people are difficult, you can say all kinds of reasons. But he said, in his opinion, he feels, Mi Yodea, who knows? Kama lo hitzlichu bezivugam. How many people have not been successful in their marriages? Ba'avon ze she'ena mesimin lev al Yerushalayim be'eis simchasam. Powerful comment. Who knows how many people have not been successful in their marriages because at no point during their height of simcha did they give a moment to pause and think about Yerushalayim and think about the Evel. And the Pasuk says we have an obligation to do that. Imeshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini. We have an obligation to do that at every time that we have any kind of celebration with each other. As we know, there is a practice at a chasana as well that we break the glass under the chuppah. And this is a very curious minhag. It's not clear exactly where it comes from. The Gemara does say a story in Maseches Brachos Daf Lamed Aleph that there was a wedding that once took place and it seemed everybody was dancing uncontrollably and things were getting a little out of hand. And therefore, one of the great leaders who was there took a big glass and threw it at the floor. He said, what kind of way is this to serve God? You think you're allowed to dance so wildly like this? Do you think this is the way God wants us to celebrate? And it calmed everyone down. Well, maybe that's the reason why we break a glass by the wedding. But it would seem to be a little out of place. We do it at the chuppah where it seems most of the people are pretty calm. Anyway, if you get up in the middle of the dancing and you stop the music for a minute and you break a big glass and everybody is shocked by what you're doing, maybe that would be different. So it's not clear exactly what this is all about. My father told me once in the name of Rabbi Gifter, obviously this is not the Pashup shot, but this is allegorically perhaps the reason why Rabbi Gifter told my father on one occasion that perhaps the reason why we break the glass is based on the comment of the Medrash. The Medrash writes, as we know, there were two different times which the Luchos were given to the Jewish people. On the first time, it was Bekolos who broke in Parshas Yisro when we read about the world came to a halt and no animals were making any noise and there was just so much fanfare and it was unbelievable what was going on. The whole world was aware that the Jewish people were accepting the Torah at the time. However, tragically as we know, those luchos did not last. Those luchos were broken. It wasn't until the second time around where HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the gift of the second luchos that Moshe Rabbeinu made psal lecha, that Moshe Rabbeinu had to construct and create a new set of luchos. It wasn't until then that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed those to be of everlasting nature. And those are the luchos that were housed in the Aron. Those are the luchos that traveled with the Jewish people throughout history. And yet, the Medrash asks, why is it that this happened? Why is it that the first set of luchos were not allowed to be of everlasting nature? Why were they broken? So the Medrash answers, because Ein lecha yafem min hatznius. Ayin hara shalat bahem. Because the whole world was watching, because there was so much noise and so much fanfare by the first giving of the luchos, and Ayin Hara was sholei pahem, and therefore they were not of everlasting nature. They were broken. She'en lecha yafem min hatznius. Now the problem is, did God not know that that could be a possibility? Why wouldn't he have done something from the outset to make sure that doesn't happen? It's a good question. Rav Meir Shapiro deals with it, not for the context of today's shir, but what the Medrash does teach us is, Ein lecha yafeh min hatznius. If you don't understand the value of tznius, and tznius not only in the way in which we dress, but tznius in the way that we act and we interact with each other, that is a very important aspect of life. And therefore the Medrash says, this is why the first luchos were broken. Rav Gifter told my father, perhaps this is an added level of meaning why we break a glass by the chuppah. We want to remind the young couple that at the time that they're embarking on building their own home, we want to infuse into their marriage and into their home what is the most important character trait? What is the most important value when you build a home? And that is Ein lecha yafeh min hatznius, that there are things that are supposed to be only spoken about in your home. There are things that are not supposed to be shared with the world. And there is something that we have to be concerned about. Perhaps an ayin hara can be sholeit when a person is not careful about the laws of tznius. And that may be breaking the glass is to remind us of the breaking of the luchos. That was his idea. Again, I don't think it's the simple pshat, but that is the idea that he put forth. The Shulchan Aruch says the reason why we do it is to remind us once again of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And that's really what the Rishonim say. We do this at a wedding to remind ourselves of the broken Beis HaMikdash, that we do not have the opportunity to experience in our time. Now, some Acharonim ask, if that is the case, don't we know that there's a biblical prohibition of Bal Tashchis? You're not allowed to destroy something unnecessarily. So what right do you have to take a functioning glass, or whatever it is that you're going to break onto the chuppah, and now you're going to make it something that is no longer usable? How do you have a right to do that? Isn't that a violation of Bal Tashchis? And basically, the crux of the answer that they give is that any time that you have a purpose for the breaking that you're doing, any time that you have a reason for the hashchasa that you're involved in, that is not called a violation of Bal Tashchis. Bal Tashchis means when I destroy something unnecessarily. But here where I have a good reason, I have a good purpose for doing the act that I'm involved in, there would be no problem of Bal Tashchis at all. There is a contemporary question for those who understand the basic rules of economics today. What happens when you have too much supply and demand? So the whole market will be thrown off and nobody will be able to do a normal business interaction. So what happens today? It's a major question in all countries. When you have, let's say, a surplus of apples, and if you're going to send all the apples to the distributors to give out to the supermarkets, what will happen? The prices are going to go down, and that's going to ruin everything. Or you have too many tomatoes, too many carrots, whatever it might be. So what do? Anybody know what they do? They destroy it. They don't give it away to the poor. They burn it. They throw it into the ocean. Because otherwise, our society is going to be one that cannot sustain itself because of the economic problem that will be created as a result of the surplus. Well, all of that makes sense if you live in America. What about if you live in Eretz Yisrael and we have a prohibition of Bal Tashchis? So what do we do then? The answer is, nobody ever asked the Shaila. But in Eretz Yisrael, they do the same thing. They also burn it and they also throw it into the ocean, into the river. Why is that something that's acceptable? Because Bal Tashchis means when you're doing something that has no purpose, no reason. But over here I do have a reason. It's because I want to make sure that the whole country is going to have a balanced economy. And if I'm going to have a surplus in one area, then that's going to throw everything else off. And therefore that would not be a violation of Bal Tashchis, the same way we would say in our case that any time you have a purpose and a reason for whatever it is that you might be doing, has to be a legitimate reason, but there would not be an issue of Bal Tashchis either. The Gemara says that Avraham Avinu had a major concern. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu from the outset that there would be a Beis HaMikdash, that his children would come back to the land of Eretz Yisrael, but he also told him that there's going to be a Churban Beis HaMikdash. So as much as they're going to have the opportunity to offer karbanos and to celebrate in a Beis HaMikdash, there will also be an issue over the fact that they will not have a Beis HaMikdash at certain periods in Jewish history later on. And Avraham Avinu was expressing his great concern. What's going to be? Jewish people have the opportunity to do tshuva. They have the opportunity to gain themselves an atonement, to gain a kapara when they offer a karban. What's going to be in generations where they're not given that incredible privilege? What's going to happen to them? They do an avera, that's it, God's going to kill them? No tshuva, no kapara? So what are we going to do? Avraham Avinu asked this question to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Ribbono Shel Olam promised him, Unishalma parim sifasenu. We will pay for our animals with our lips. What does that mean? So the Gemara tells us, the Medrash writes, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, at a time when you have no opportunity to offer karbanos, as long as you speak about the parshas hakarbanos, as long as you speak about what the karbanos represent, that would be in the place. That would be a sufficient substitute for the karban that you're not actually able to bring in your generation. So there were some Acharonim, the Mabit, who was a contemporary of the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo in the 1500s, the Mabit asked, does this apply to everything? Let's say I live in Soviet Russia, and under the Soviet Jewry issue that they had there, nobody was able to keep Shabbos, or the ones who did had to do so with tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. So what if I was a person who was not given the opportunity to keep Shabbos? Is it good enough if I go sit down in my house and I learn the laws of Shabbos, even though I can't observe it? Can that be a substitute for keeping Shabbos itself at a time when I cannot do the mitzvah? Or, for example, those of us living in America, when I'm not able to do all of the mitzvahs hatoluyas ba'aretz, Shemitah and Yovel and Trumas and Maisers and Bikurim and all the other mitzvahs that we cannot do today here in Chutz La'aretz, would you say that if a person makes time to go and learn the halachos of all of these things that are only relevant in Eretz Yisrael, is it considered as if I have done it as well? Or is this something that is only specific to karbanos? HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us at a time when you have no Beis HaMikdash, as long as you speak about that korbanos, that would be good enough. That would be sufficient. So that is a major discussion in the Acharonim. But writes the Tur in the bottom of the page, number Gimel. The Tur writes that it is important. I know everybody's in a rush in the morning, and we don't have time to daven everything that it says in the Siddur. But there are parts of davening that are perhaps more important than others. And one of those is something that is very often overlooked. We've spoken about this in the past, and that is karbanos. So if obviously we're raising young children and we don't have time, so then we don't have an obligation to daven. If we are not raising young children, and it just means that we have to wake up a little bit earlier to daven, we should be waking up a little bit earlier to daven. Women share the obligation of davening as men do. Maybe it's on a different level, but women have to daven every day as well. And if a woman has the opportunity to do so and she's just being lazy and therefore not doing it, that would not be a sufficient excuse. A woman is supposed to daven as well every day and ask for everything that she needs to be successful throughout the day. So the Tur writes in Aruch Chaim Siman Memches, look at number Gimel on the bottom. He says, V'kavu likros parshas hatamid. Not only do we have Psuki de Zimra and Kriya Shema and Shmona Esrei and all the different things, but he says, V'kavu likros parshas hatamid kidei isa b'medrash. As part of the davening, they also instituted, you'll see in the very beginning of the Siddur, after the Birchas HaShachar, before Baruch Sha'amar, there's a whole section of the Siddur called the Karbanos. Most of us just skip over it. Men also do. Don't feel bad. Everybody skips over it. What is that all about? Writes the Tur, that this is based on our Medrash. Bizman She'ein Beis HaMikdash Kayam, Ma Tehei Aleihem. That we asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's going to be with the Jewish people at a time when we have no Beis HaMikdash? Amar Hashem, God responded, Kvar Hikdamti Lahem Seder HaKarbanos. I have already given them all of the psukim about karbanos, kozman she'oskim bahem, whenever they read the psukim that describe all of the avoda that was done in the Beis HaMikdash, mala ani aleihem ki'ilu hikrivam lefana. I consider it as if this is the substitute for the karban itself. Not only that, writes the Tur, v'tov lamar acharei zeh. After one says the parshas hatamid, which is important to say every morning, it's just one paragraph, not so long, doesn't take such a long time, but the Shulchan Aruch says we're supposed to say it every day, and after we say it, he says, we should use it as an opportunity to say as well, Ribon ha'olamim, ata tzivisani lahakriv karban tamid b'moado, you have instructed us to offer a karban tamid. Now who's instructed to offer the karban tamid? Karban tamid was the offering that was brought every morning and every afternoon in the Beis HaMikdash. Who brought it? On behalf of who? The Kohanim brought it on behalf of? Which people? The entire Jewish people. So somebody made a mistake last night and said, well, I'm a woman, and I wasn't able to do service in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore the carbon was not brought on my behalf. That is not a correct statement. Because every year they used to have a collection of the Machzis HaShekel. Machzis HaShekel, the reason for the collection was not only as a census, but it was also to collect money for a functioning Beis HaMikdash. And that is where they used to use the funds to pay for the carbon tamid every day of the year. It costs money. Every day you have to bring a tamid in the morning, an animal in the morning, animal in the afternoon. That was brought collectively on behalf of the entire Jewish people. All of us, men and women alike. And therefore, we are all supposed to say every day the carbon hatamid in the place as a substitute for the carbon that we're not able to offer today. Not only that, the Ramah writes that after a person says the karban hatamid, you should also use it as an opportunity to daven. Yiratzon she'ibana beis hamikdash. We should daven for a beis hamikdash. Why? Because the whole reason why we say this today is because we don't have a beis hamikdash, and we do not have the opportunity to offer the karbanos the way we're supposed to. And therefore, the Ramah says it would make sense that when we're saying that which reminds us of the beis hamikdash and that which is supposed to be as a substitute for the karbanos themselves, it would make sense that we also use it as a time to daven for the Yibana Beis HaMikdash to have Yerushalayim once again be rebuilt. Yeah.
Women were nechuyev with machzis hashekel?
Yeah. Women used to give.
It's clear, yeah?
I think so.
Okay.
Am I mistaken?
Sure, either. Which,
what?
Sure, wasn't there a certain amount of men over
what?
Age?
What?
What did she say? She wasn't sure.
What was your question?
They
did, but Machzis HaShekel, the Mishnah in Shkalim talks about children and women, how involved they were in giving the Machzis HaShekel, but it's clear from the way the Mishnah set it up that the Machzis HaShekel was something that was used on behalf of the entire community equally as our collective carbon toward toward the Beis HaMikdash. And not only that, the Gemara says even further that we are all considered to be the Baal HaKarban. It says that every day we are considered as if we have offered a karban. So the Gemara says in Pesachim Daf Nun, when a person offers a karban, for whatever reason, I feel in a good mood, I offer a karban today, I go up, I travel to the Beis HaMikdash, I feel it's the right time for me to bring whatever karban it might be. On such a day, the Gemara says, there's an Isser Malacha. It's a yamta for me. It's a personal, private yamta for me because I have offered a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, I'm not allowed to go to work. Well, ask the Gemara if that's the case. How could any of us ever go to work any day of the year if every single day it's as if we offer a carbon? Good question. Correct? Well, anybody here who ever daven Musaf knows that we say in the Musaf of Shalosh Regalim, we say, Kohanim biduchanam uluvim, right? We say, Kohanim ba'avodasam luvim biduchanam biyisrael b'ma'amadam. What's Yisrael b'ma'amadam? We look forward to a day when we'll have the Kohanim ba'avodasam doing their work. The Levim are going to stand on their balcony doing all of their work, which is singing the songs and making sure all the music is going properly. And Yisrael b'ma'amadam. What does that mean? We look forward to the day when the Jews, all of the Yisraelim, the simple folk like me, will be standing around and watching. Is that really what we ask for? We look forward to the day when we'll all just be spectators again. Is that really what we're davening for? It sounds like a shallow tefillah. And the answer, what it means is, the Mishnayos tell us, is that they had rotations of Jews. The entire Jewish community had to take a week off every year to go to the Beis HaMikdash to represent the rest of the Jewish people. Since every day we are considered the Baal HaKarban, since every day a Karban Tamid is being brought on our behalf, we need representation. We need someone to stand there on our behalf and say, we take responsibility for this Karban. So once a year, everybody had to take pause and take the opportunity to go to Yerushalayim, take off a week of work. Outside of the Shalosh Regalim, you had your turn when you had to be the one, Yisrael b'ma'amadam. Doesn't mean you were there just to watch what was going on to be a yanta, but it means Yisrael b'ma'amadam, you had to be there to stand there while the karbanos are being offered to show we as the Jewish community take responsibility for the karban that's being offered on our behalf. So this, number one, is something that we do, or we're supposed to do every day, once again, to be as a substitute, as a reminder for the Churban Beis HaMikdash, for the Karbanos that we used to offer in the Beis HaMikdash when it was Bibinyana. If you think about it, we have so many mitzvos midrabanan that are scattered about throughout the year, which are meant to remind us of the Churban as well. Anybody know some examples of a mitzvah that was instituted after the Churban Beis HaMikdash to remind us of the days when we had a Beis HaMikdash? Many, many different prominent mitzvahs throughout the year that we're all familiar with.
Shabbos, we have Lecha
Mishnah. That was because of the man. That was not because of the Beis HaMikdash, yeah? Eating an egg at the Seder, okay. Okay, that's a good one. Let's think of some other ones. Sviras HaOmer. What does the Pasuk say? Usvartam Lachem Mimachras HaShabbos. When we're given the mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer, you look in the Pasuk and it says, we're supposed to start counting Sfiras HaOmer miyom haviachem es Omer haTenufa, which means from the day that you offer the Karban HaOmer in the Beis HaMikdash. Well, today, when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and today where we don't offer the Karban, would we even have an obligation of Sfiras HaOmer? And the general assumption is that Sfiras HaOmer bizman hazeh is only midrabanan. Sfiras HaOmer today is not an obligation like it was in the times of the Chumash, because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. You ever wonder? Why, after we count Sfira, do we say, Harachaman hu yachzer lanu avodas beis hamigdash lemkoma? Isn't that a strange place to put the tefillah? What, do we just insert a tefillah whenever we do a mitzvah? After you light Shabbos candles, you daven that we should have a beis hamigdash? After you make Kiddush on Shabbos, you should daven for a beis hamigdash? Obviously not. After you do a mitzvah, which is clearly only instituted because of Churban beis hamigdash, we daven that the beis hamigdash should be brought back. Like the Torah says, when you say Parshas HaTamid in the morning, which we're all supposed to do, when you say Parshas HaTamid in the morning, you end off by saying Yihi Ratzon. We hope we'll have the opportunity to once again do it the real way when we have a Beis HaMikdash. And similarly, when we count Sfira every year, after we count the Sfira, we say Yihi Ratzon Sheyibana Beis HaMikdash, that we should have a Beis HaMikdash once again, and we should no longer have this imitation mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. We should do it the way it was really instructed to be done originally. You think about the mitzvah of shaking the Dalet Minim on Sukkot. We all try our best to shake the Dalminim every day of Sukkot, besides for the last days, and on Shabbos, obviously. But for the rest of the duration of Sukkot, we shake the Dalminim. The Torah itself, what is the obligation of shaking Dalminim on Sukkot? What does it say?
First day.
Says, Lekachtem lachem bayom harishon. But the Pasuk also says, Usmachtem lefnei Hashem elokeichem shivas yamim. That means, all those who lived outside of the Beis HaMikdash, which is most of us, had to only shake lulav on the first day of Sukkot. All those who were in Yerushalayim and by the Beis HaMikdash had to shake Usmachtem lefnei Hashem elokeichem. If you live in the presence of the Shekhinah, then you have to shake the Dalminim shivas yamim, 7 days. Well, the Chacham said, what's going to be if we live at a time for the last 2,500 years when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash? Who's going to remember the mitzvah of shaking Dalminim? Who's going to remember that you're supposed to shake every day of Yom Tov the way you were supposed to in the times of a Beis HaMikdash? Nobody's going to think about that. And therefore they said, we have to do something to remind generations of Churban of what used to be in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore they said, the way to do so is, we are going to institute that every Jew, wherever they live, has to shake the Dalminim for the entire duration of Sukkot, just like they used to do in the days of a Beis HaMikdash. But the real mitzvah only is to shake in Yerushalayim. This is why I'm sure there are many in the room who have been to Eretz Yisrael for Sukkot before. And there were many great Gedolim who used to go out of their way on some point on Sukkot to shake the Dalminim in Yerushalayim, in the Old City, in front of the Makam HaMikdash. Why would they do that? Because that is the real mitzvah. The Torah says, Usmachtem lefnei Hashem elokeichem shivas yamim, that you're supposed to have the Dalad Minim being shaken in Yerushalayim by the Beis HaMikdash. Today, we only do an imitation mitzvah, midirabanan, to remind us of what used to be. But if you have the opportunity at some point over Sukkot to go and visit Yerushalayim and shake the Dalad Minim in the place where it's supposed to be shaken, midaraisa, then you might be fulfilling a real mitzvah the way it's supposed to be done. This is why there were many great Gedolim who used to do that. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was not an extreme person, he was a very normal, thought-out personality, and he used to go out of his way to go and shake the Dalminim. And we know many others used to do the same thing. There were many, many other kinds of institutions that we have. Korech, on the night of the Seder. Anybody ever notice? We eat the Korech and we say, Zeicher l'migdash kehillel. So some people think, Zeicher l'migdash kehillel is the bracha. It is not the bracha. Zeicher l'migdash kehillel is a tefillah. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah even says, Zeicher l'migdash kehillel, he thinks, should be said after you eat the korech. Now that's going to sound surprising to some people, but the reason why is because I made a bracha al achilas matzah, I made a bracha al achilas maror, right? I ate the matzah, I ate the maror. Now, you're not supposed to make any sort of hefsik, right? You're not supposed to talk, which inevitably somebody in the family always talks, but you're not supposed to have any hefsik, the Haggadah says, until after you finish eating the korech. Why? Because that's really a continuation of the bracha you made on the matzah and the maror. So, ask the Mishnah Berurah, how do you say Zeicher l'migdash kehillel? That would seem to be a hefsik. So some people think, well, Zeicher l'migdash kehillel is the bracha. It's not. Zeicher l'migdash kehillel is just reminding us, Kein asa hillel bizman shebeis hamigdash hayakayim, that when there was a beis hamigdash, he would make a sandwich with the Pesach matzah umar, which is the way it's supposed to be done. The whole institution today of afikomen, what is the afikomen all about? We eat matzah. You know what that used to be? Carbon Pesach. The end of the meal, the dessert of the meal on the night of the Seder, as strange as it sounds, that the dessert is a good steak, that is what used to be eaten at the very end of the Pesach Seder, and afikomen today is just in the place of what used to be in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. The point being, we have so many different mitzvot scattered about throughout the year, in which we are meant to remind ourselves of the Beis HaMikdash b'churbana. And these are scattered about throughout the Yom Tovim, that every celebration that we have, every Yom Tov that we experience, should once again give us the opportunity to be reminded of the fact that we have lost the Beis HaMikdash and that life is not perfect the way it should be. Let's look at the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed, the second side of the page, where we're told the following. Minalan Davdinan Zeicher l'Migdash. And we'll close with this Gemara. It's a fast day. I want everyone to get home and be healthy. So the Gemara says, Minalan Davdinan Zeicher l'Migdash. How do you know that we have an obligation to do things throughout the year as a Zeicher l'Migdash, to remind ourselves of the time when we had a Beis HaMikdash? The Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says, Ki ele arukah lach umimakosecha erpaecha nu'um Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us that He will heal us from all of our wounds, from all of our problems. Ki nirche karulaf, because you are considered the nidachim. You are the ones who are cast aside. Tzioni doresh ein la. The pasuk ends off. Tzion, Yerushalayim, is a place where doresh ein la. Nobody cares about it. Nobody talks about it. And the Gemara says, from the fact that the pasuk says, Tzion hi doresh ein la, that this is a place, this is a country that nobody talks about, nobody thinks about, michlal, you can infer from that, debay drisha, that we need to do whatever we can throughout the year to remind ourselves that we need to speak and think about Churban Yerushalayim. And that, says the Gemara, is why we have instituted all of these different mitzvahs throughout the year. This is why we say Parshas HaTamid. This is why we do the mitzvah of Dalet Minim throughout all the duration of Sukkot. This is why we have the Afikoman. This is why we have so many different mitzvahs, as we mentioned, throughout the Shir. All just simply to remind ourselves of the fact that life is not the way it should be. And Tzion hi doresh ein la. We have an obligation, certainly on a day like Asar B'Teves, when we're supposed to be thinking and contemplating about what Churban means to all of us, but every day of the year we have an obligation to think about how much of a lack and a loss we are living through without having a Beis HaMikdash today. And that is something that is so important, not only during the Yomim Tovim, not only in our wedding celebrations, like we know we have all these different minhagim by a wedding, but every single day throughout the year. This is why the Gemara says you have to leave out from the meal, you have to leave out from the jewelry, you have to leave out from the home that you're building, and things have to be scaled back because we need to have built-in reminders for ourselves that life is not the way it should be. And when we have this day to commemorate Asar B'Teves, to commemorate the Churban Beis HaMikdash, we also use it as an opportunity, like the Navi Zechariah said. We mentioned it last week. Tzom HaChamishi, Vitzom HaRavi, Vitzom HaShvi'i, Vitzom HaAsiri. Yihiyu L'Sason U'L'Simcha U'L'Ma'adim Tovim. We use it as an opportunity to daven, like the Rambam says, that these days should be days of celebration. There should be days of Sason v'Simcha, of Yagon v'Anacha, when the Jewish community will once again have that ultimate Yeshua, when we will have that ultimate Geula. Let's use this as a day to daven sincerely for that Geula, when we will once again have the experience of living a life in a Beis HaMikdash, with the Karbanos once again reunited, our focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, b'mheira v'yameinu, amen v'amen.